I'm Jenny Nevinson, and you are listening to the Minder Podcast.
Welcome to episode 34 of the Minder Podcast in association with Minder.org. I am your host, Paul Stenning. In this episode, we feature an interview with director of four episodes, Robert Young. Robert directed the first episode of Series 3, Dead Men Do Tell Tales, and three episodes in Series 4, Senior Citizen Kane, Hydrain's Pilferer, and Windows. As I explained to him, I did try to find him early on when I started this podcast and finally managed to find the right agent, and luckily Robert was receptive. During our talk, he gives great insight into working with George Cole and Dennis Waterman, especially George, and we discuss the uniqueness of one of the finest gentlemen of all time in the world of television and film. Given Robert directed one of my favourite episodes, we go into that a little, and he tells a great story about what really happened during the motorbike stunt scene towards the end of Senior Citizen Kane. We also find out why there was such a huge scene of smashing windows in that particular episode. It was not what you might expect. Then there is a little on Patrick Malahide, who was rather like his character, which makes much more sense to me as time goes on. I recommend watching him in Hunted, the TV series from 2012. No one that evil could appear on this fine podcast, surely. Robert also talks a little bit about fellow director Martin Campbell, as well as some of the specifics about just how Minder was filmed, lending new insight into just a few of the reasons as to what made it so special. Simon Channing Williams, a name you may not be familiar with, I was but had forgotten exactly why. I'd seen him a very long time ago and unfortunately forgot what he did, but he's also given great credit for his work behind the scenes on the episodes which Robert directed. Simon was associate producer of seven Minder episodes, all of which were in 1985, and included Minder on the Orient Express, and one of my favourites, Arthur is Dead, Long Live Arthur. As Robert mentioned, he sadly passed away in 2009. I've included his obituary on the Minder podcast website. So it is over to Robert Young for this episode 34 of the Minder Podcast in association with Minder.org.
So on Minder, what would you like me? I mean, you've done quite a few on Minder, I believe.
Yes, this is the 34th, or maybe 36 actual recorded, because some of them are from a few weeks ago. But you look quite astonished that there's that many. I could.
I am really. I suppose.
Well, so am I, to be honest. I started it with the goal of not so much a number, but more who I could speak to, and trying to find people who, A, were still alive, B, were actually somewhere in the ether that I could find them and contact them, and obviously that they wanted to do it.
Yeah.
I think with yourself, I tried initially and couldn't find contact details. And it was through IMDb Pro more recently that I actually found you were through an agency. And then it was actually very straightforward. So it's a shame I didn't do that earlier.
Good. Okay.
But yes, I've done a lot on them. But I can state for sure that you're the first director of, I think your first director, other than maybe an actor I've spoken to a long time ago for other things, who may have directed an episode or something, but they're not really a director. You are definitely the first director I've ever spoken to. So forgive me if I don't know some of the jargon or the process behind what you actually do, because I have asked some of the actors in certain cases, what was the director like, Roy Ward Baker or someone like that? And many of them say, well, he didn't really do very much directing. So, so
yeah, listen, I've actually heard one woman complaining that she had been kept waiting. She had a dinner date to get to. This director kept doing this, kept doing that. And I asked her who the director was. She couldn't remember. And I said, well, if you do remember, you'll find out that it's me. And I was actually talking to my daughter. It just shows you.
Wow.
I mean, the perception of actors, unless they're George or someone who is the lead, then they know. I mean, George and Dennis were extraordinary. And so do you want me to start about those two, or do you want to start about how you got the job, or indeed the admiration that I felt for Lord Shirley, the producer, how extraordinary they were to get a machine that turned out such high quality television, and it is huge, high quality. And they did have a very strong idea of what they wanted. And if you didn't give them what they wanted to begin with, I'm afraid that you were possibly not asked back again, or in the case of somebody like Linda LaPlante, maybe she wrote a couple of episodes and it just wasn't right. And I remember there was one time when I did describe to George what I wanted him to do in an action sequence. And he just looked at me for a moment and he said, are there going to be subtitles on this? I said, what do you mean? He said, well, I wouldn't do that. I said, oh, what would you do? And he told me what he would do, and I filmed that. And you see, they had an extraordinary, all of them, you know, the producers and Dennis and George knew what the thing was about. By the time I got on, they knew exactly what was good and what wasn't good.
Mm-hmm.
I could go on a bit more about that too, because the cast, the crew rather, I don't know whether you've interviewed any of those. John Maskell, have you interviewed?
No, but I've interviewed Nick Pearson.
Yes, Nick Pearson, definitely. He was an operator or a lighting, can't remember.
The camera grip.
The grip.
Camera operator.
Oh, right. Well, John Maskell was your operator. And he would, I'd set a shot up, which I thought was rather good. And he said, no, George, they won't like that. The producers will call you in and say, we don't want you to do that. And there was two things. They didn't like silhouettes, which always attracts a director, because there's a sort of, you know, just the image itself is slightly diffused, and then you can bring it into whatever you want to do. They didn't like that. They also didn't like if you shot over the shoulder at another person, that you mask the face. So if you're looking at me and that's a head and I'm being filmed, that they wouldn't like.
Mm-hmm.
What did that?
Yeah.
They're small but very important things that kept, you know, you knew immediately. But what was good is that the crew knew what the producers wanted. And so no strict rules. If you wanted to go ahead and do it, then you'd be called in and they'd say, we don't like the way you're doing that. So you would be told, or they would give you a nod. So it was a really good lesson of of filming as a group and as a whole that was extraordinary, fast, efficient. And of course, the top efficiency comes from George and Dennis. And you'd think that they were just gossiping on the sidelines and laughing and chatting and whatever. As you got close and you listened in, they're doing lines. Mm. Yeah. So, and the other thing they did, which is a mark of not only good actors, I think, but you know why Mindy was so good, is that everybody, almost everybody that's invited in as the star of the show, maybe, like Susie Quattrell, was she called? No.
Susie Quattrell.
They would make them feel at home, comfortable, and at ease. So you didn't get, you know, what nerves they had, and they do, of course, coming on to a new set, was dispelled. So that's one thing that is really remarkable about them. I think the other thing is the rhythm. I don't know whether you're aware, but you see, you are brought on 2 weeks, you do your recceing, and you talk about the script. 2 weeks shoot, and 2 weeks to edit. No more, no less. So every show went out after 6 weeks or was ready to go out. And that's a remarkable to keep that up and to be the quality to never drop. And the reason that they managed to do that, I think, was that the co-producer, in my thing, all times I film, it was Simon Channing Williams. And Simon, I don't know whether you've heard about him or not, he died sadly, but look him up, because you'll find that he became one of our top producers, actually, in films with Mike Lee. He was Mike Lee's producer. But Simon, what they would do is give you someone like Simon, who would be the sort of producer, but also your first assistant that took you round. He came with you, as did your crew. So you were given the cameraman and the lighting cameraman. No, not the operator, sorry, but the lighting. And you'd go round to all the locations, looking at them all together, and then talk about how you would shoot it all together. Then when on the first day of filming, your Simon would then become your first director's assistant. And that means that he's controlling the floor, and he's also has been with you right from the word go. So also understands what your shots you're trying to get in and the time element, which is very important, that he would know whether you're falling behind or not. Anybody might know that as who's a good first, but Simon and people like him would know what you're trying to achieve way before you get onto the floor. So that, as a mechanical way of making, was brilliant. And I don't know if anyone else has really copied that, because I have done Minder and other series, Jeeves and Worcester, all are in their own way highly efficient. But Minder had a sharpness about it that was really good.
Well, you mentioned when you first started, how did that process go? How did you get onto that first episode?
I got it. I was asked to do it, but I know that it was the agent that I had, who was the best agent anyone could ever have, and called Duncan Heath. And he sold me to George, I think, you know, on the phone, this guy, et cetera, schnook. And so I got it. And it was a real lesson, actually. It was wonderful to do. Wonderful to do.
Do you just mean the first episode, or every episode was a lesson?
Every one. I've just, because I, you knew, you know, you, coming back to it. I mean, some of them I look at and think, good Lord. But you know, looking back, seeing the cast, seeing the writers, I mean, it's quite incredible, really. So I loved every moment of it. I can't tell you. It was fun.
Well, we're jumping ahead for me to ask you this question, but given that, how was there a reason why you didn't do more than four episodes?
Do you know, I can't remember. I suspect that it was that I went on for a movie or something else came up. And I honestly don't remember that because there it was nothing but a joy, and I would have felt it if there was anything else. No, I don't. I went on to do other things, and I can't remember quite what they were. I'll have to look it up.
Well, I do definitely want to mention you literally directed, I think, probably certainly the best, if not the second best episode, which was Senior Citizen Kane. That's the one with Lionel Jeffries and...
Let me tell you. Yeah. I mean, I suppose that's another thing that you could get people on that you just have admired. I admired him and wanted to work with him. And that's part of the joy, isn't it? Of being able to say, I'd like Lionel Jeffries. Why didn't you get him? Amazing. I'm just trying, what was it called?
Senior Citizen Kane.
I got it. Yeah, I got it here. Yeah. I mean, there was, yes, I remember what he was a joy to work with, I must tell you. And so was James Cosmo. I worked with him two or three times, liked him. Gillian Telford, who's a girl in a pub, which was quite good for Gillian, I think.
Yeah.
I did enjoy it. There was one occasion which shows on another side there. I can't remember. I tried to look him up, but he was one of the stuntmen, and he had to drive a motorbike up the steps and over a bridge and down the steps, and it was iron, and there were so that there on the side were railings. And he went up there, and he tried it out, of course. But what he didn't do is try it out with someone on the back, because it's supposed to be Lionel Jeffries doing it, and he's got a girl on the back. And when he came to do it, his foot got caught in the side of the railings. I didn't know this, and turned the whole thing round. His foot was almost back to front. Went across, came down, came up to us, because of course he was imitating Lionel. And we both sat there and said, that was wonderful, thank you. He said, oh, I'm so glad. Apparently walked off, went round the side of the building and fell flat on his face, fainted. They wouldn't let, you know, their pride would not let you know that something had gone wrong. And they wouldn't admit. That was a lesson, because you've got to protect your boys. I mean, I was sad that happened to him, but God, what courage!
Come here. That Sheila has stitched Cecil up like a kipper. Not necessarily.
Oh, no. Dad! Oh, no. No, please! Oh, no. Dad! Oh, please! Daddy! He's coming back! Dad! Come on, he's got the money! Dad!
handle this?
Oh, no, this is mine.
Frankly, darling, I think I'm better qualified. Terry!
Both of them? Yeah. At the same time? Yeah. Are you tired?
No, I only made them coffee.
Oh, Terry.
Cool, they were well choked when I told them the old Cecil got away.
Mm. It seems the old man and his secretary have been fiddling the VAT, petty cash, inland revenue, you name it, for 10 years. Of course, nothing was in his name. Vi and Johnny own the firm. And now it's just poor old Johnny with all the bills to pay.
Oh, my heart bleeds for him.
It is a disgrace. Hmm? That old goat sitting there with that lovely girl and all that cash.
Yeah, slippery as soap on a door handle, isn't he?
Excuse me, gents. We have a visitor. Terry. Hi, Jock. How's it going?
I want to discuss a matter of spelling with you, Arthur.
Spelling?
Yeah. And this label.
Label? Oh, yeah, label. Sit down, Jock. I'll explain that to you. See, it's a little quirk of the English language that you're probably not familiar with. See, you say Parliament, but it is spelt Parliament.
Well, I'm talking about whisky with an E. Whisky with an E is favoured by our Irish friends.
Oh? Oh, yeah, that's all to do with the general election. Isn't it, Terry?
Yeah.
See, her indoors at number 10. She
made an edict.
Edict. You see, any whiskey drunk at the House of Commons must have an E in it. Now, this
does not apply. Don't panic, Arthur. It's just a label I'm complaining about. Whiskey's great. I'll take another 5 cases.
Oh. Dave, drinks all round.
Of course, the large ones.
Don't be silly.
Well, come on in, have a few. Okay.
So anyway, lots of things that one learnt and enjoyed doing it.
Mm-hmm. So what was you, I mean, there's so many things to ask you really, but you mentioned George and Dennis specifically, so.
Yeah.
I mean, had you ever met them or worked with them before on anything? I couldn't see anything.
Never. I don't think I did. I remained friends with George afterwards, and used to go and see Dennis whenever I could. I loved it when I went to see him in My Fair Lady, and he had a bar in his dressing room. I, you know, offered you a drink from the bar. We want one, yes, please. But they were remarkable, and George is one of. Well, they both were wonderful, but George was one of the nicest actors that I've ever come across.
Every single person has said that he was kind, gentle, polite. Literally every word is a compliment about him.
Yeah.
Do you think that was unusual, even from the era that he came from? Where people were more gentlemanly, was that still unusual, do you think?
Yes, I think it is, really. Most of the actors that I've worked with and actresses have mostly been pretty good. They really have. But he was exceptional, that's all. Exceptional. There was a gentleness, a wit, a presence, an ability to make even the simple things very funny. And yet he's not laughing at it himself. It's coming through. I think Alistair Sim was his mentor. And if you look, Alistair Sim was I never worked with him, never met him. But if you look at his work, he is effortless as well, isn't he? And I I wish I'd asked George more about Alistair Sim, but I'm afraid, you know, these things, you think afterwards, oh God, I wish I'd asked him and talked to him more about it. But you know what? There wasn't much socializing because you're working so fast. You can't, you know, there is the moment where you just say, are you okay? And you don't want to interfere with them anyway, because they're working when they're off the set. And so the idea of sort of going, which is what Dennis would like to do, go off and have a half a pint during the lunch hour. And as you probably know, always followed by one of the crew to make sure everything was okay. Yeah.
Did you, I mean, you said you learned a lot. Did you actually, because you make it sound as if it was, if you're learning, that must represent some type of challenge during the process. But did you actually find it challenging, or did you kind of feel that you knew exactly what they needed and you just went with it yourself? And it, did you help it to run smoothly, or did you find it, especially from the first episode that you did, was it a challenge jumping into this well-oiled machine, as it were?
No, but I'm trying to differentiate between, you know, did I help or did it help me? I think a bit of both, because I was thinking, you know, when, you know, about our chat, it did teach me a tremendous amount of the speed of looking at actors that are really superb, of being able to let them work and then follow them. You're not trying to push them into something which they don't want to do. They know what they want to do. They know the series is theirs. It's not mine. It's theirs, and it's the producers, and who had such a wonderful hand on it without being overbearing. So that there were lots of things that you could be imaginative about, but you couldn't go out on a limb and, you know, start doing silly things. And one learned that, you know, that there was another way of doing it, possibly simpler and faster.
Mm. There's a scene in that episode I mentioned to you where, because one of the settings is the Lionel Jeffries character's house, which is this very large mansion. And there's a scene in it where virtually every member of the cast is, and extras are in there, and he's standing at the top of the stairway. But it obviously it moves around and you get the full panorama of this house and the amount of people in there. Is that type of shot very difficult to oversee?
Yeah, I think it is. But it also, once you've said what you want with it, your first assistant, which is again Channing Williams, and do look him up because this was a huge force in our industry and wasn't recognized nearly as much as he should be. And he also, by the way, while I'm on him, was a very kind, helpful, highly intelligent man. And as a producer, a first assistant, second to none. But what would happen, you see, is that you would put the shot that you wanted, the extras, as people who are other than this, the cast, they would be under his direction. And once you said, this is what I want, not only would he get them to do it, but very often he would possibly direct them himself. And quite honestly, I don't remember whether I did it or he did it, because there was a time when I prided myself in always knowing every single actor, extra, and crew member on a floor. It was sort of a matter of pride that you just didn't say, hey, you didn't mention the person's name, and talk to them as a person. And Simon also had that.
Were you responsible for instructing the actors quite often in terms of what they needed to do? Or was it, particularly with guest actors, did you find that they needed more direction?
Yes, oh, very much so. Because for them, it's all new.
Mm.
The ones that have always been there, like the publican, etc., didn't have to tell them anything. I mean, they're there. It's sort of, I remember Susie Quantrop, possibly, you know, was the most nervous of all the people.
I've actually interviewed her.
Did you?
Yeah.
Did she remember very much or not?
She did, yeah. She actually started talking about a different TV show and we had to stop and kind of restart. But once she realised which episode we were actually talking about, she did remember. She didn't mention...
We were by the river, I remember.
Yeah, remembered that.
Yeah.
It was obviously a nice shot that...
Yeah, I was quite pleased.
Yeah. Yeah, I mean, it still looks good because whether you watch the series again or whether you just look at stills from some of the, you know, they are, I mean, it goes back to what you said before where, just for people listening, you were putting your hand in front of your face to show that it was not the thing to have someone's face half shot. They had to be separated. And things like that, when you look at stills and look back on things, it's... as soon as you said it, I could picture every scene is always like that. It's always separated and perfectly shot so that they're always in frame, as it were.
Yeah.
So those types of things really matter because I think that's partly why people remember the locations, because they got to see them so clearly and they were very well part of the shot.
And that is a huge point that a lot of directors go and they have a set that they can work in and a set that can be a real set and they don't use it.
Mm.
And your art director goes spare saying, you know, they found this has got such a lot that can offer the film, and directors just often ignore that. So I don't think we ever ignored anyone. I'm trying to remember, do you remember, I think she was called Eileen, who was the art director on it. Do you remember at all?
It doesn't sound familiar.
You know, I wish I'd thought of that before, because she was very big in the theatre as well. And what she did is that she would draw the set or the location, mainly when it was a set. And she would draw from the best angle. So when you looked at it, she would put where the camera was going to be so that if you wanted to ignore it, fine. Or you think you've got a better one, fine. But not usually. She had planned everything for that. That's a major shot. And if you ignore all those people that help you like that, well, that's a waste, isn't it?
So you tended to follow her suggestion?
Oh, do you say that again?
You tended to follow her suggestion?
Absolutely. Absolutely. I think that there is a caveat here. Because if someone is not very good and giving you suggestions all the time, well then of course you do ignore them. I think that was the skill again of those producers, who, if they chose someone that wasn't very good, I think that person didn't last at all. I think they weren't there the next day.
Did you have a favourite out of those episodes that you did? Did anyone stand out to you?
Yes, I don't know why, but High Plains Drifter. I remember, I think it was David Corder, wasn't it?
Yes.
It, he was so good. And I remember, you know, the shots of the thief and getting in and whatever. Yeah. I remember that, and it was a night shoot, so they're never easy. But I love that.
Right. Hello, Eddie. Oh, come on. It's me, innit? I haven't got that old, have I?
Hello, Terry. What are you doing here?
Well, if I had a big blue hat, I'd ask you the same thing. You're not nicking that, are you?
Would I bother?
No, I suppose not, no. There, I'll just buy your foot there.
Oh, yeah. You gave me a start, that's all. You ain't doing too bad, are you?
What is? No. I'm just driving the geezer around in it for a couple of days, that's all. Mate of Arthur's.
Listen. I've got to move. I've got to pick someone up. You still drink in the same places?
Yeah, more or less, yeah.
All right. I'll sort you out. We'll have a few, yeah?
Yeah, nice one. Yeah, mind how you go, eh?
See you, Terry.
Bye, mate.
Yeah, it's going to be a lot of big people there tonight, Dom. Pop stars, all that rubbish. Oliver Reed might even take a look in. So listen, I want you to make them cross-eyed. I want to go in there feeling like Napoleon with Josephine on his arm, or Clark Gable with Scarlet... What's it? Scarlet...
Fever?
Eh?
You can't be Clark Gable and Napoleon, unless you go in fancy dress. Do my zip-up for me, would you?
Yeah. Well... You know what I mean, don't you? I want them to look at me and think, oh, that Mickey the Fish, he's a lucky bastard. Because that's the way I feel when I'm with you.
They're more likely to wonder where your wife is, don't you think? Where is she anyway?
She's in Yorkshire. Don't worry about it.
I don't. What's she doing there?
Potholing without a guidebook, I hope. Now, she's got relatives up there, hundreds of them. She does a sort of a grand tour on my checkbook.
You're a generous man, Mickey.
Yeah, I know. That's why I want to treat myself tonight. So listen, you put on all the good stuff, Susie, eh? All the sparklers, earrings, you know what I mean? You put them on.
It's nice to hear it the other way around for a change.
Here. What do you mean the other way around? What's wrong?
They're not here, it's all gone.
Gone? What do you mean gone?
My jewellery, my necklace and everything. Well, I mean, it was in that box and it's gone.
You say it's been stolen? All that stuff I gave it. Are you trying to tell me it's been nicked?
No, Mickey. I had it on toast for breakfast. Look, it was in that box this afternoon and it's not there now, is it?
Who's been here?
Nobody's been here. And I haven't been out, and that's the truth.
Well, if that's the truth, where are they? It's like Fort Knox here, you know. You can't just stroll in. I mean, what happened? They flying out the window, did they?
There was one which is it Stephen Ray was in, but
Windows one.
Windows.
Yeah.
Where we destroyed. God, when I think back, but this was glass. Glass houses that were huge, but they were going to get rid of them, and so the location manager had found them and said, well, look, could you hang on for a couple of weeks because we've got to do a bit of that. And so that was just extraordinary. That really was Stephen Ray, wasn't it? Yeah
it sounded noisy, even just on the, I can imagine the noise was greater in the
yeah,
for real.
Yeah.
If it's unusual to find something that's not destroyed voluntarily, it's actually already going to be destroyed.
Yes, exactly. So that again is very, you know, the effort of your location manager, of which, of course, again, coming from the producers, is I didn't choose him. The producers chose the people that worked on the set. And They were. That's why they were brilliant. That's all part of it.
Do you think that'll upset them enough, Alex?
Oh, yes. I think that should do it, William.
I don't believe you'd go, not just like that.
No, nor did I. But who knows anybody? We were good at making our marriage look right in front of our friends. That's about all we were good at in the end. We were so unhappy together. 5 years is a long time to take getting nowhere. Maybe Roddy's right. He said I was a spoiled brat who was brought up to expect too much from life.
That's not the Laura I know.
No. And the man who said it wasn't the Roddy I married.
I recall that you mentioned Lloyd Shirley. And just, he was the executive producer, is that right?
Well, there were two of them, weren't there?
It was George Taylor, was it?
George Taylor and Lloyd Shirley. They worked like twins, so I can say no more. They both were superb. I do know. Yeah, they were both wonderful.
Hmm. And I think people always want to know, he won't do an interview himself because he's either very too well known now, or he's not fond of Minder for various contractual reasons, I think. But Patrick Malahide, people are always very interested in how he was.
Ah. He was the character. he actually...
Off-screen, you mean?
I don't remember him other than this strange sort of... But wasn't he good?
Absolutely.
Very sad that he isn't going to talk, though. I'd love to listen to him.
Yeah, I think he's obviously one of those people that doesn't really do interviews anyway. And then, so perhaps he could be the type of person that might not want to say very much anyway. So some people are not ripe for interviews in a way, and they know that, and they avoid interviews consequently. But is there anything in terms of direction that you could maybe tell the layman in terms of Minder, what maybe something we've not mentioned yet? You mentioned the actual framing of the shot. Is there anything else in terms of placement of people or how you worked on the shots that made a difference to how it actually turned out, that perhaps might be stretching it, but maybe makes those episodes a bit different because you did them? Is there a style element that we wouldn't know about until you told us what it was?
Gosh, that's quite difficult, really. There must be something of a style if you go through, because I did Minders, Jeeves, you know, and it's odd. I can't quite answer that. It's each piece, each different series had its own sort of style, didn't it? Mm. And I started off the Jeeves and Worcester style, but I didn't start off the Minder style. And so part of a producer's job is to make sure that it doesn't suddenly look different from the last one. And yet, you know, Campbell did a couple of Minders, didn't he? And who went on to do Bond and was a superb director.
Martin Campbell.
Martin Campbell, yes. Zebedee, I think we called him.
Quite enthusiastic.
He did some amazing camera work and shots, but I don't think that came out. There are certain touches that I know immediately. He did Bergerac as well, and I knew exactly that it was Martin who had done that particular series episode. When I was watching it, I thought, that's him. You know, there were little touches that he had. But I wish I could tell you a few of mine. In fact, I mean, the worst thing ever for me is watching a series, and I said to my daughter, you know, it's not bad, this, is it? She said, no, you did it. I said, did I? That's awful. But sometimes, you know. Anyway.
Brilliant. Well, Robert, thank you so much for your time. And you've really opened up some new avenues that only you probably could have done by what you've mentioned, because I've never heard those things before. So I will now always see the shots being done separately. And I'll look at the two people I'd not heard of before.
Good.
Yeah.
Good.
And hopefully.
Well, thank you for persevering with me. Thank you.
No, it was a great pleasure. I'm very glad I did. Thank you very much.
Okay.
All right. Cheers. Bye-bye.
Yeah. Bye-bye.
I would like to thank Simon Sharkey for his great patience and help in setting up this interview. It is much appreciated. And of course, a big thank you to Robert Young, who made time and gave a great interview. Thank you also to those of you who have written in recently. Stephen Ball wrote to ask me if I had tried to interview George Sweeney, which a few others have also asked. The answer is yes, although I did not hear back from his manager, in which situation you are never sure whether the message was passed on or not. Is it the management or the person who does not want to do the interview? Some people tell you, some people don't. When they don't want to do an interview, they often ignore you completely. But some people are polite enough to at least let you know. In this case, I've not heard back. As I said to Stephen, I can try again. Anyway, when I told Stephen of this, he wrote back saying, as you say, it may well be worth another shot with his manager. Maybe he isn't as active now. What a great back catalogue of work he has, especially with Euston Films. I once contacted John Bluthall's manager to ask if I could write to him. He gave me a contact address, and for some unknown reason, I never got round to it. I'm a big fan of your podcasts. I think they're great, as I have always loved Minder. I think I may have spotted an ad-lib from George in The Return of the Invisible Man. It's the scene where Scotch Harry reunites with his wife, accompanied by Terry and Arthur. Arthur sits them down and says, when the bell rings, come out fighting. You can actually see Terry smiling at the line. Maybe I'm wrong, but it's rare to see Dennis smiling like that in many episodes. Keep up the great work, Paul. Awesome, Stephen. Thank you for your support. And I rewatched that episode with what you said in mind and can see your point. John Bryan picked up on me mentioning James Cosmo recently, who was also, of course, given praise by Robert Young in this episode. John writes, I met him about 5 years ago at a London train station on my way to Windsor and did have a brief chat and photo with him. He was very approachable. Nowadays, he looks more like Pat Roach, but minus the ladder and paintbrush. Quite right. I'd also like to read a little of listener Lee Priest's email regarding the Andrew Payne tribute. Lee says, I listened to your Andrew Payne tribute today, and of course I just had to pay tribute to the tribute, and most importantly, pay tribute myself. The Minder landscape created by the best writers like Andrew is vast, and they've taken us on so many emotional journeys. Aside from his television and theatre work, he adapted novels for the screen. This adaptability across mediums was impressive, but the ability to get inside the head of somebody else's characters was a key reason he was one of the best writers on Minder. The first mistake some writers make is writing for Arthur rather than Terry. Andrew liked reluctant and honest heroes who were ultimately called into action. Sound familiar? This no doubt came from his background, and I believe this is part of his psyche.
Combined with his appreciation of actors and technical ability as a writer, he was able to write the complexities that characters like Terry McCann needed. If you have Terry McCann, you have Minder. Thank you so much for securing the interview with Andrew and for paying tribute to him. The rapport you established in that interview helped give us a glimpse into the work of genius. I am so grateful to you for the Minder podcast. They are as rich as the material you cover. So well done, my son. Personally, I have always liked the reluctant working class hero too, and probably why Andrew's work resonates so much with me and my writing. Andrew made an insightful interpretation of the Terry-Arthur relationship and wrote for it better than anybody. Thank you, Lee. I think you make a very good point, particularly with the fact that certain writers wrote for Arthur first rather than at least Terry and Arthur, or even sometimes just Terry. Many of some of the better episodes were actually the opposite, the ones that were not written with George Cole's Comedy Hour in mind. So excellent points, Lee, and thanks as ever for writing in and noticing things others do not. Come back next month for an interview, which I know many of you will be both surprised by and very interested in. For now, thanks for listening.